Welcome to the Farcast, bringing you insights into Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. It is the 21st day of March. Made it through the Ides. Made it through the Ides of March. Good for you, folks. You made it through St. Patrick's Day. And the worst part about making it through St. Patrick's Day, of course, is it's going to be another full year before we get to do it again. Markets have continued to hold up. We had a couple of softer weeks. Jay Powell was speaking yesterday about the Fed and said, told markets, look, inflation data came out a little bit hotter than perhaps we'd expected. It didn't continue the downtrend we were had been excited to see. But this is a short-term trend, and we're not going to react to the short-term trend. We're going to hold our position. And in fact, we still expect to ease three times, quarter of a point each, three quarters of a point before year end. Ladies and gentlemen, Farr does not believe them. Farr does not believe them. I think two, maybe, and I think there's an argument for none. I think there's an argument for none. Because if you still have GDP growth expanding, and you still have economic growth and an expanding economy, and you still have unemployment hovering at 4%, and the economy is basically just fine, why does the Fed have to change its position? And in fact, if they don't have to change their position, wouldn't that be much better for them, for their record, to say, hey, we nailed it. We took rates to the exact, precise, perfect point whereby we had price stability, meaning that inflation is coming under control. We're going to give it some time. The economy is expanding, and we've got full employment. Boom. Job done. We're going home. Well, we're going to wait and see. Based on that yesterday, the Fed telling us what the Fed should have been expected to tell us, that they're going to be prudent and patient, disciplined and dispassionate. Markets rallied. They were like, woo, they're going to cut rates. 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 And they do their little happy dance and they take stocks higher. And what do they take higher? They take the same old stuff higher. Those Magnificent Seven go higher. I've been very encouraged to see a broadening in the rally in the S&P 500. A lot more companies are being brought along. What do you do and how do you invest in a market that's making new highs? And if the market's going to react and just simply run higher without regard to valuation, can you stay out of it because of your discipline, or do you have to get on that train and ride? This is a tough question for all portfolio managers, I mean everywhere, who have a benchmark in either out the windshield and in the rearview mirror, which we do at all times. So I do what I always do when I don't know what the hell's going on. I call Jim Labenthal. He is a partner at Cerity Partners and a CNBC contributor and my great friend. Welcome back, Jim.
Michael, you gave us a lot of launching points there. I'm going to try not to fixate on the pint of Guinness, which is basically where 90% of my brain is right now at 8 in the morning. Thank you for that.
Before we came on, ladies and gentlemen, about my great friend PJ O'Rourke, who passed away just a year and a half ago, really. PJ would have enjoyed you fixating. PJ was a member of the Society of the Friendly Sons of St. Patrick and sat next to me at my table for years and years. He just called and go, we going again? Yes, we're going again. All right, I'll be there. And that was that. Anyway, you got to come to one of these, Jim. I'm sorry I didn't have you when PJ was coming.
I accept your invitation whenever and wherever it is. Awesome. Let's launch into this. And I think where I'll start with you is this broadening of the rally that you mentioned. I mean, obviously there's other things to talk about, including yesterday's rally. We'll get to that. But, you know, when we've been talking about this broadening of the rally for quite some time, and there's been this question of, would the broadening happen by the performance, the outperformance of the technology sector coming down, share prices coming down to meet those of the rest of the market? Or would the rest of the market pick up? And I think we've got the answer to that question. I don't think we've ever said, hey, go sell your tech stocks and put it all into financials, industrials, and energy. We said, no, just shift your balance a little bit because the technology stocks are doing fine, but financials, industrials, energy, and materials have one heck of a bid to them right now. And I think it needs to be respected.
No question about it. And in a look, we don't even have to go to a lowering rate environment. We can make some pretty darn good assumptions on a stable rate environment. Stability is really good for investors. Jim, come back with me, though. It's not just the Magnificent Seven that are surging to new highs. Lots of stocks are surging to new highs. It has broadened out. And if you've got two-thirds of your portfolio trading at or near all-time highs, or, you know, 60%, 50%, you've got some dry powder. And I know you've got some dry powder, ladies and gentlemen, because there's $7 trillion in money markets right now. Do you just keep sitting there clipping your coupons at 5% in money market? Or do you put it to work? If you have to put it to work, where do you put it to work, Jim?
Well, I think you act with patience and with prudence. Patience means you don't put every dollar into the market today. But prudence also means defining that there are sectors of the market that are attractively priced. I mentioned the financials a second ago. The XLF is up roughly 10% through the first almost 3 months of the year. And yet most of its stocks trade at around 10 times earnings. Most of them have good dividend yields, trade at relatively low valuations of book value. That's an area that you can look at. I can say the exact same thing about the energy sector, which is up about 6%, 7% after yesterday's rally year to date as well. I mean, you can be patient, meaning you can put some money to work in these non-tech sectors, but not all of it at once. Yesterday's rally was a little goofy, right? The Fed didn't do anything other than confirm it was not getting more hawkish. It didn't say it was getting more dovish. It didn't say everything is hunky-dory. It just said, all right, you know, we see the issues with inflation. We're not going to get more hawkish. For the market to rally as much as it did, both the stock and bond market, is a little bit like that scene from the movie Up. And this may be a little bit esoteric for some folks, a little arcane, but this animated movie.
Wait. The one with Doug and the old man and the house that was going to get that one?
Exactly. Ed Asner voices the man
I was so excited to see that movie because I'd heard about it and I thought, oh, this will be a fun, lighthearted. Oh my God, I cried. It was awful. It made me so sad. I mean, it's a great kind of movie and you're cheering and it sucks you in, but God, it was a sad movie. I mean,
I know it made you feel emotions you've never felt before.
Now, that's not true, but it reminded me of quite a few that I, you know, try to avoid on a regular. I mean, I'm Irish. We can repress most anything, but damn, that was a tough. I was looking for the Aladdin movie, you know, where the bad guy loses and the guy gets the girl and everything ends up happening. No.
Okay. I don't know how much Harry's going to have to edit of this, but at least he's got a lot of raw material to work with. In the movie Up, there is this anthropomorphic animated dog named Doug who can speak. And having a conversation with him is actually very lucid until the moment that in the corner of his peripheral vision, he sees a squirrel and then drops everything he's doing and says, squirrel, and points at it. And that's all he can focus on. That is the market reaction yesterday, if you ask me. It just, the market, we've often said, is like a small yapping dog running from one side of the path to the other, while the economy is the dog walker walking down the path. Yesterday was that small yapping dog just yelling squirrel and focusing on the fact that the Fed did not project 2 rate cuts, but kept it at 3 rate cuts. That's silly. That's ridiculous. I think that your point, Michael, is right on, that with the economy where it is and with inflation doing what it's doing, there may be no reason to cut rates this year. I mean, we'll see. I think there still will be 2, but there is a valid argument for maybe there will be none. That doesn't mean, folks, that you should go sell stocks today. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying, and I think Michael will agree with this, is if you have your high quality stocks in whatever sector, if these are high quality cash flow generating stocks, you should expect that 2 years from now, given the economic strength that we're seeing, that they will be higher than they are today. Along that path of the next 2 years, they're likely to take a step backwards. And this market is due for a correction, could happen at any time.
Markets correct. They go down. We forget about it, but they do. It's normal. It's healthy, right?
That's exactly right. You get a correction in the market, usually more than once a year, or at least once a year. That is defined as the market going down by 10% or more. Folks, when this happens, the media will be trying to fan the flames of your fear. They will be trying to say, this is it. We've got a banking crisis. We've got a geopolitical warfare issue going on. We've got a bad election, whatever it is. Just relax. Corrections happen, and they feel more uncomfortable the longer a stock market has gone up. They are part, as Michael just said, they are part of the normal path of investing. So again, if you have cash on the sidelines right now, patience. You don't have to put it all to work at once. Prudence says you can put some of the money to work right now, but look further afield than just the tech darlings. There are many sectors. Hadn't even mentioned healthcare, by the way, having a nice rebound after the terrible 2023. There are a ton of values in healthcare to look at. You can get invested. It's just not a time to put every dollar to work.
Caution and discipline. And, you know, there's still nothing seems to be wrong with money market while you wait. So go back to that idea of patience, ladies and gentlemen. Jim also mentioned the banking sector and the XLF. And one of the things that I always want to caution folks, price to earnings ratio, even though they are low, not still probably the best way to look at banks. Listen to the other thing Jim said, which was price to book. It's that book value ratio. If you talk to any banking analyst, what's the book value? What's the ratio to book? And anytime you're got a one handle on that book and are a 1.1, 1.2 times book, you might even get a discount to book, but those are pretty good levels at which you can take a look at banks. Jim?
I just want to add to what you just said. Absolutely correct. Look at dividend yields. Because yes, in financials, in energy, in materials, you can easily find high quality, well-valued companies with 3% plus dividend yields. I will grant you, folks, that's not the 5% that you're getting in your money markets, but it's not bad. You get that 3% plus with the potential for capital appreciation in the share price, which I think Michael and I both see coming.
Well, and when you do that and look at those yields, and I'm going to go final word here only because I'm way out of time because I ran my mouth more than you ran your mouth this week, Jim. That was my fault. But high dividends, and you can chime in, high dividends are often a warning sign too. Don't get sucked in by a high dividend. You see right now when you know that Fed funds are 5%, and you've got a 10-year treasury at 4%. You see an 8% yield out there on a stock and get all excited. There's a reason they're paying you to take that risk. And one of two things is going to happen. At some point, they're going to cut that yield. They're going to cut that dividend. Or maybe they'll come through okay, but it's a warning sign and a red flag. It is not a half-price dinner sign out there. Don't start running for the dinner bell.
I completely agree. That's why, by the way, I led with 3% plus. You can go in the communication sector. You can go in the communication sector and you can see some obvious names that have 6% plus dividend yields. Look at their share prices over the last 5 and 10 years. They've given a lot of that back in declining share prices.
Jim Labenthal, the partner at Cerity Partners, contributor on CNBC. As we say on the Farcast, listen to Labenthal. Jim, thank you. We're going to be right back with Dan Mahaffey. And coming up in segment three today, Jack Barugian. Guy has probably gotten it as right as anybody I know other than Labenthal. When we come back on the Farcast.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Farcast. Now it's time for political analyst Dan Mahaffey and your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. Joining me now, Dan Mahaffey from the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, the vice chairman of the Dr. Scholl Foundation and the senior political analyst on the Farcast, where we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Welcome back, Dan.
Good morning, Michael. Great to be talking to you again. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Again this week, Dan and I were at a conference. I was on a panel that Dan was hosting in Washington day before yesterday. Bunch of very bright young people. The fellows at the Center for the Study of the Presidency and Congress, annual fellows. We talked about economics. And we talked about what was going on financially on Capitol Hill with the deficit and all of those sorts of things. And a very bright young group. They were enjoyable and gave me hope, Dan.
Yes, college fellows are always great to see. It's although it is a win-lose. The win is that they are so young, hopeful, and have not yet become cynical yet. The lose is that you just realize how much older you're getting as you compare to our best and brightest students.
These college students are not yet young enough to be my grandchildren's ages, but they are well younger than my children at this point. And that does cause me. I mean, I look at them and they just look like children, very bright children. Fine. All good. Dan, all sorts of things going on. President Biden has basically two times the money in the bank for his campaign that President Trump has. President Trump has this problem of a $354.9 million penalty in New York, and he has to come up with the money. And guess what? Nobody wants to offer a bond to President Trump for that $350 million-ish figure. Go figure. And if he has to come up with the cash, it could really almost wipe him out. Despite claims of being a billionaire, no one's been able to see that the president has anywhere near that much money, cash, or net worth. So Trump Tower, everything else, when you get into billions, you're talking about serious dough. So how much of a problem is this for the president? How does it come out? I know it energizes his base, but...
Oh, certainly it energizes his base, but this is a headwind. Billions are real numbers when it comes to the hit he has to take if these fines do require the money to be put up front while he appeals. The question of money, though, if we look at the campaign, this is not just a Donald Trump question. The Republicans in the House lag behind their Democratic counterparts in fundraising. There hasn't been the same kind of big donor money going to Republicans. Yes, they're getting grassroots dollars. They're getting base supporter money, but that's not, not been enough so far. RNC deficit, another thing that will have to be addressed. So look, one of the major things that Trump and Republicans now have to figure out if we are, let's admit it, we're in the general election now. It's March, but we're in the general election. They have to worry about this money situation and solve it, not just Trump's own legal issues, but frankly, to the party's gap to the Democrats. Second, I would say these court cases, we look at the trend and the discussions of, yes, they've ginned up his supporters. Among many of his blue collar supporters, too, I don't think the penalties have that same cachet. How many of them have had tax liens or fines or other things in their experience? Some of these focus groups, it makes it sound like they feel like Trump is now one of them. In some ways, facing that same kind of financial penalty from the man.
Yeah. Well, it's this is more than that. Will it be? Will it stick? Will he have to do it? Will it be crippling? And will it have an effect on the election? Saw the whole Kennedy family, the whole Kennedy family at the White House around St. Patrick's Day, basically repudiating Robert F. Kennedy's presidential bid, even though he seems to be getting as much as 15% of the vote. What's going on there?
Look, they want to make it clear that the Biden campaign is fully supported by the broader Kennedy family. You know, one of the major concerns is simply that circa 2000, a Palm Beach voter will go in, see Kennedy and be, oh, that's the guy I want. And therefore a vote is lost for Biden. So it's diminishing that power of the third party narrative, as well as really diluting his only major asset, which is the Kennedy name.
Yeah. And if you are one of the double haters, meaning that you hate Biden and you hate Trump and you don't want to vote for either one of them, I would say that those coming from the Republican base who don't want to vote for either one are probably less likely to pull the Kennedy lever
Sure. And they're much more worried about, they don't want him to be a real alternative for, you know, a left-wing voter in a place like Madison, Wisconsin, or, you know, a Las Vegas area, where they're really worried about, you only matter if you're in a swing state now.
Yeah, you only matter if you're in a swing state. Okay, we're trying to squelch Israel. It doesn't seem we're going to squelch Israel. The Taoiseach in Ireland resigned very quickly after St. Patrick's Day. He did the big tour, came to the White House, and he's gone. Don't know exactly what's going on there, but not particularly consequential to the world of politics or the economic world. Dan, what has your attention now? And we see that we're getting funding bills passed. We have to get the other side of the aisle in there. Is Mike Johnson in trouble? Will he be the speaker a year from now?
That's a good question about whether he'll be the speaker a year from now. I think not. And that's simply because my prediction right now is that the Democrats flip the House narrowly. So he wouldn't be speaker a year from now. He's gotten the spending package through. If we do have any kind of a partial government shutdown, it would merely be an hours or a weekend evening now, it's looking, but I think they can get everything signed by the deadline. That said, still some big things on his plate. We haven't solved the FAA. Foreign intelligence powers are up for renewal. There's still some things that need to get done. It looks like the Senate is going to sit on any compromise tax bill that had come out. So no movement really there. You know, there's things that'll need to be done, but folks are going to dig into the election year trenches, as it were. The only thing I think we'll see in the next couple weeks or maybe 3 weeks, there will be movement in the House on a foreign aid package for Ukraine, for Israel, for Taiwan. The contours of that and how it is structured still remains to be seen, but the will to get it done is there now that they've solved these funding impasses.
Anything other than this election going to capture your attention over the next 6 months?
I'm really watching. I'm continuing to watch the situation in Haiti.
Yes.
I think with the immigration narrative, a severe collapse there, something we see there could add to just this sense of instability that really weighs on the voter, as well as the immigration chaos at our border. You know, something that is not only the human cost, but you see the legal mess we have through the courts, through the different rulings, and the fact of the matter that all of these problems we see at the border need to be solved by legislation, and that the best attempt we had now languishes because of election year politics.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Dan, we appreciate it very much. Please come back next week. We're going to have more insights and try and figure out what's going on in the wonderful
and say,
world.
Say prayers for your friends who live in swing states, because they're going to get the worst commercials, the worst malarkey for the next months. It's going to be really dirty and gross when it comes to this political slog they're going to get.
Good time to be living in Florida. You know, I have a friend who's running for governor of West Virginia right now. His name is Moore Capito. And he is engaged. He's divorced. He has a couple of kids, but he's engaged to Professor Liberty Vittert, professor MIT, Harvard, and Washington University in St. Louis. Published, brilliant, and just a delightful person. So right now, the other side of the campaign has come out and announced that she is a prostitute hired by his campaign to provide companionship and arm candy because he is secretly gay. There is no merit in either one of those, though I talked with Dr. Vittert and she was tickled pink. She said, of all the things they could have called me, they called me a hooker. I mean, really? So this is a 38-year-old PhD in data science and analytics. I mean, as maybe the smartest person I've ever talked to in my life. So if they will do that in a state election and just make it up and throw it out there, in the 1940s, I can't remember the election, Dan, where The announcement was, and I want you to know something, ladies and gentlemen, my opponent was a thespian in college, a practicing thespian in college. That did ruin the campaign. So a lot of it is about this messaging, and none of it's very fair. A thespian is an actor, ladies and gentlemen. Just for those of, in case I stuttered. Dan, anything else to add before we run?
No, great talking to you as always. Take care.
Always. We're going to be back with Jack Barugian, folks. Stay with us, please.
Michael Farr and the Farrcast are proud to support Heroes, Inc. Heroes supports the spouses and children of law enforcement officers and firefighters who gave their lives in the line of duty to the greater Washington, D.C. community. Their singular goal is to honor the supreme sacrifice made by these individuals by caring for their families. Heroes' work begins within 24 hours of the tragic loss and continues indefinitely. We invite you to learn more about Heroes' mission at heroes.org. We hope that you will consider supporting Heroes as they endeavor to honor those who protect us. That's heroes.org. Heroes, here for you, here for good. And now, back to the Farrcast and your host, Michael Farr. Thank you for joining us on the Farrcast. And now, back to your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back to the Farrcast. I am Michael Farr. It is the 21st day of March. It is springtime in the United States. Springtime, the seasons have rolled over, and it always makes me smile, and I feel a little bit better. Markets are feeling a little bit better. Triple highs yesterday on the Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ all made new highs. The rule is buy low, so what do you buy now? If the rule is buy low, what do you do now? Should you be selling? The Fed says they're going to stay the course, even though the inflation data was a little, inflation data were a little bit hotter. Can't forget my English teacher roots. How do you make sense of all of this? We talked to Jim Labenthal. We've listened to politics from Mahaffey. Now we go to our great friend, Jack Barugian. He's chairman of SmartX Data. SmartX Data Exchange. Okay. Hey, Jack, markets are making new all-time highs.
Yep.
You've been as good a barometer as we've had. Let's get really down to the basics here. How long does this rally last? I've talked to so many folks of our vintage who all say it's got to come down. It's just got to come down. This can't keep going on forever. And yet it's going on forever. What's happening, Jack?
One of the things that I've always learned as a trader, now this is not as an investor, but as a trader, is when that express train starts to run and fly, you do not get in front of it. All right? It's not going to stop for you and it'll run you over. You know, so I guess, you know, there's another way to say it too. I remember one of my first days trading, one of the oldest traders took me aside and said, you know, if you come to this trading floor with an ego and $1 million, you're going to leave with just your ego. And you know, and I thought that was a great line because it kind of kept me, you know, very steady throughout my entire career taking risk in markets. So right now you have a very euphoric market. When you talk to people, they're euphoric. The Fed is even giving them a reason to be euphoric. Why? Well, you know, there are a couple of reasons for it, but and we'll get into that in a little while. But more importantly, when you have this much euphoria, it concerns me. All right. So, you know, I think what I'm trying to say in a very long-winded term here is that you have all the smart money telling us that the fast money and the easy money is behind us. And now it's going to get very difficult. We've gone through periods where it's been easy money. You see it. All of a sudden, you think to yourself, these next 5 months, market's going to go straight up. And it does. You know, and it actually does that. You know, when have we ever had that in our careers, Michael, where we've actually anticipated exactly what the Fed's going to do? We see it happening. Here's another situation where they've got their hands tied going into an election year. You know, they've got no choice, all right, except for one thing, and that is the long end of the yield curve. So if they can keep that muted, which they have so far and kept it suppressed, then they'll be okay. They'll thread the needle.
And why is the long end a problem for them?
The long end of the yield curve, they can't control like the short end. All right. The long end of the yield curve is that barometer that tells them that they have debased too much. It's already started.
Debased what?
Debased the currency, the fiat currency, the U.S. dollar. Not only the U.S. dollar, but global currencies. Right now, you have global central banks all looking at each other to see who's going to blink first, right? Who's the first one to start cutting rates? So now you've got a situation where even without inflation being down to the target levels that they want, they're already talking about cutting rates. That is not good for fiat currencies. And how do we know that? Look at gold. Gold is probably the most important barometer these days in the marketplace. And very few people are talking about this rally in gold and why it's happening. You know, it started in Bitcoin because they were looking for asset classes that they could put into that were not going to be fiat currency related. Well, now gold is that old safe haven, if you think about it. So now the entire world is looking at gold as a way to be able to hedge out these inflationary risks that are hanging over the market. And the Fed has basically told us, don't worry about it.
Because, don't worry about it.
You know, it's a paradox that they're in. All right. They can't cut rates. They can't raise rates. So what do? They talk a good game. Jay Powell's been talking a good game these last few months. And I think talking a good game is almost as important as anything else. And that's one of the reasons the market's doing what it's doing. And I'll leave you with one more thought. Okay. Everything that we have seen, all this inflation, has been intentional. Our good friend Jim Urio always has been talking about that. He goes, it's intentional. And he's absolutely right. They have tried to.
We can't grow ourselves out of this much debt. We cannot grow ourselves. We have created too big a rock for God to lift. That's what the Jesuits used to teach us. You know, in theology class, when we got to be older students, they'd say, if God's all powerful, can God create a rock too big for God to lift? Talk amongst yourselves. Jack, here's the I guess the backup argument of what I believe are weak minds. Okay, the backup argument, the default argument of the weak mind is to say, don't worry about the massive debt. Don't worry that service on the debt is going to exceed the defense spending in the U.S. next year. Don't worry that we're going to add $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years if we control our spending. Don't worry about it because, here it is, the backup argument for the weak-minded is because we are the world's reserve currency and there's no place else to go and so we're going to be fine. Really? Really? That's it? That's all you got? But you know the thing that bothers me too, Jack, with this argument is they're starting to say it more stridently. You know, when you really don't have an argument, you get louder.
Yeah.
You try and find a larger and taller soapbox. It doesn't make you right. What am I missing, or what are you and I missing? And where do you go? How do you strategically gain some high ground?
Well, here, on the one hand, it goes back to what I was saying about the 10 and the 30 and the long end of the curve. So right now, that's really where his focus is, and that's what he's going to watch. So that, you know, he didn't come right out and say it yesterday, but that's what's going to dictate their next moves. If you start to see bond vigilantes come in and start to knock down that 10 and 30, and we start to see 5% rates again in 10 years, it's going to change the dynamics of everything that he's talking about. Now, what have we really missed? I don't think we've missed a lot, except for the fact that this AI productivity miracle that's taking place is real.
Yes.
Okay, it's absolutely real.
Yes.
And with it, though, are the consequences that we have yet to understand. Okay, and I'll explain this to you. In my mind, it's going to create structural unemployment. Remember what happens when
people... It has to, Jack. It has to.
Well, in the old days, when people lost their jobs, they did it because business slowed down. Now they're going to lose them because of automation. They're going to lose them because of technology. Technology is only going to get faster and better over the course of the next 5 or 10 years. Are we going to be able to re-educate our workforce that quickly? It used to be where...
We don't need to re-educate the workforce. AI re-educates itself, and it just replaces the workforce.
That's exactly right. When I was just in the Middle East, as I was talking to you earlier about this, and I said, we went to a Burger King, all right, at an airport. There were two people in that Burger King. That was it. Two people. Everything else was automated. And I said to my wife, this is the future. All right. Yep. So this is why those fast food franchises could not care less what the minimum wage is. All right. Because they know that those jobs will be eliminated in another 5 to 10 years. So there's going to be something that happens. And it's going to be much, in my mind, like what we saw happen in Japan. That structural unemployment that created an entire generation of stagnation. And unfortunately, we might be heading there quicker than we think. Just getting back to the markets, Michael, I think one of the things that we want to really pay attention to, again, are how interest rates are reacting in these next 6 months. Because they will tell us whether we are right, and this could be more of a frothy top. And if it is, then we've got to start preparing for, you know, that 20-30% correction.
Is the Fed doing the right thing?
No. The Fed
What should the Fed be doing?
Fed should be basically telling us that they're not going to raise rates this year. They're going to maintain their 2% target for inflation. They're going to stay steady. I was hoping that Jay Powell would do that. And if he caught political pressure, he'd resign. You know what I mean? Or he'd leave because he's almost near the end of his reign anyway, if you think about it. But
ladies and gentlemen, I didn't coach him. I didn't coach him. He said the same thing that Farr's been saying for over a year. If the Fed's got it right, the Fed doesn't do anything. There's no reason. You've got an economy that's expanding. Right. You've got unemployment that's low, and the price stability is trending back towards the norm. There is no reason for the Fed to intervene now other than political, and don't think they won't be political.
Michael, they're starting to lose credibility. I think they started to maybe a few years ago, but
started under Greenspan.
You know what? It might have been under Greenspan, but for me, it was more under Bernanke and then Yellen. You know, once we start, basically made cash worthless. All right. And that's really what happened over the course of those last 20 years of Fed governors that we've been dealing with, and including this one. And now he's talking about keeping rates, bringing them back down, even with inflation where it's at. Have you tried to buy a house? You know, have you? It's ridiculous. Some of the logic that's being used was the same logic that told us that inflation was transitory when we were all looking at each other going, no, it's not. All right. And now he's telling us, you know, basically that we've won and he's going to lower rates because we've reached the end. And we're all going, no, we haven't. No, it's not. So it's counterintuitive in many ways. I don't understand it. But here, you know what? It's the market we have, not the market we want. You know, and that's unfortunately how we have to think about it.
Jack, there's $7 trillion now in money market funds. People are saying the market really can't go down when there's $7 trillion in money market funds. Now, without even asking you about it, I know that Jack and Mike are going to say, ha ha, watch. Something can't happen. I'll tell you it can.
My money that's sitting in one of those funds is not going back into the market. I'm now in my 60s. Why would I put my money into a risky market that's trading 22 times over earnings when I can earn 4 or 5% on my money? Look, I'm fine doing that. Okay, at least with part of it. You know, so I have no problem doing that. You know, but the reality is that, you know, that money could stay very sticky, all right, in the interest rate sector. Right? And it can grow there. It does not necessarily have to move. I think you're absolutely right.
Well, you know, you've got $1 million in money market. You're part of that $7 trillion, and you're getting your $50,000 a year in money market interest in a virtually almost guaranteed kind of an instrument. Money markets are mutual funds, folks, and they value can go up and down. They typically don't move and break the buck, as we say in the industry, but they can. But it's a very, very stable, low risk in investment most of the time. But all of the big institutions, whether it's Schwab or Fidelity, or big. So money markets, you don't worry about. If that's my risk free return, I'm okay with that. I've got other things that can make money and grow.
That's exactly right.
And Jack and I are, well, we say that. I say that Jack's older. Jack would tell you that we're the same age. When was your birthday, Jack?
March 9th.
Happy, happy birthday.
Thank you, sir.
He is March 9th, 1963.
61.
61. Sorry, 19. We're 63 years old. That's what it was. 1961. Yeah. Kenny Polcari is March 29th, 1961. I think Insana is the 28th of March, 1961. Yep. And I'm April 24th. 1961. So Jack's the old man in the group, as you can tell by Several weeks, this crowd of ours from 1961. I wonder if there's something in the water in 1961 that led us all into this business, Jack.
Well, my parents were poor immigrants. They came here, and you know what? They were just lucky enough to have a job. They did it the right way. They waited on a list for 7 years. You know what?
Okay, Jack, what do I do with my portfolio between now and year end? Give me your view as to where markets end. You said that the freight train is rolling or whatever,
right.
Whatever is out of the gates and will bowl you down. Yes, the momentum is to the upside. Year end, are we 20% higher and are interest rates still at 4.2% on the 10-year?
I don't think so, Michael, unless we start to see rate cuts, all right? In which case, we're going to see gold at $3,000, and we'll probably see the S&P back at 6,000 or up to 6,000, all right? Because there's going to be a forced risk-taking issue, all right? You have to put your money to work. Sitting in cash is going to kill you. And that's when you might see some of that $7 trillion come out if they start to lower interest rates aggressively. Now, if they do that, you're going to see a steepening of the yield curve like you wouldn't believe, because I would think that's when we start to see the 10-year over 5%.
And that's when the Fed's lost control.
That's when they've lost control. So I can't see them doing that. But going back to it, do I think that money, am I going to see the market go up 20% from here? Probably not. You know, I'm very happy with the gains that I've seen in the market to date. All right. You know, I mean, if I get another 5% between now and the end of the year, having that money sit in T-bills for me or sit in, a CD for me, that's fine, too. I have no problem. I do want to be very careful. I've got a couple of trades on. There needs to be a reset. There needs to be a bit of a shakeout. It can't be this easy. You and I know that. And that's really, you know, for me, the head scratcher. You know, eventually something's got to give.
Everybody our age says the same thing. Ladies and gentlemen, new young doctors right out of medical school are very bright and they can tell you everything in the book. That 55-year-old doctor who's seen it all before can diagnose with fewer tests because she's seen it before at 55 years old. Listen to the experience that you hear on the Farcast. I'm just telling you, best advice I have. Jack Barugian is the chairman of Smart Exchange Data, SmartX Data, and one of our great friends and one of the smartest, wisest guys I get to talk to. Pay attention. Fiscal irresponsibility will not be solved by being the world's reserve currency over time. That's not the answer. You've got to be responsible, ladies and gentlemen in Washington, D.C. And listeners, hold them accountable, will you please? Get them to do the right thing because they're not going there on their own. Jack Barugian's my great friend. Thank you, Jack.
My pleasure, Michael. Always, always a pleasure being on your show.
That's it for another Farcast, ladies and gentlemen. We have covered Wall Street, Washington, and the world once again this week. To give you a better idea of what's going on behind the scenes and hopefully help you look at the world a bit differently, think about your portfolio a little bit differently. We've done it again this week. We'll be back next week. For my producer, Harry Jennings, all of us at Farr, Miller & Washington, Hightower Advisors, have a great weekend. Thank you so much. Please share us on social media. I'll see you next week.
That's a wrap for this week's episode of the Farcast. We hope you enjoy the show as much as we enjoy making it for you. Thanks to our guests this week, Jim Labenthal, Dan Mahaffey, and special guest, Jack Barugian. The Farcast is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and comes to you weekly for free on all major podcast platforms, including Google, TuneIn, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. You can stream past episodes as well as subscribe so you never miss a new one. Please be aware that anytime we or any of our guests mention a specific company, sector, or refer to performance in relation to an earnings report, news headline, or economic trend, it's not a recommendation to buy or sell. Review the risks and rewards of any investment with your financial advisor for what specific investment and general strategy is appropriate for you before you make any investment decision. As always, if we can be of assistance at Farr, Miller & Washington, please feel free to reach out to me at hjennings@farrmiller.com. We are here to help, and I'm happy to arrange for any of our listeners an appointment with one of our financial professionals to review your portfolio, your needs, and your goals.
We love reading all of your notes and try to reply to as many as we can. You can reach us at hjennings@barmiller.com and let us know any questions you have about past episodes or questions you'd like us to address in upcoming shows. Please subscribe and share the show, and we'll be back with you next week. Take care, stay safe, and stay healthy. Thanks for listening to the Farcast, Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Farr Miller & Washington is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Some investment professionals may also be registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. All information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Farr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC have not independently verified the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Farr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC and any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties, expressed or implied, as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions or results obtained from the use of this information. Farr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC and any of its affiliates assume no liability or any action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to the information. This podcast and the materials contained herein were created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Farr Miller & Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates do not provide tax or legal advice. This material was not intended or written to be used or presented in any way to any entity as tax or legal advice. Clients are urged to consult their tax and/or legal advisors for related questions.